first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of July 9th, 2019. That is a Tuesday. Thank you to the Denver Post for partnering with us. Head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL for a special deal on all their digital content. Coming live on the HTHL hotline from the front porch of Hotel California, Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
You know, it's a cool evening here in Southern California. And the moon is up, and the sun has set, and palm trees are not on fire, and I'm jet-lagged, but I'm okay. How about you, Matt?
I'm doing all right. It is hot. Well, at least for me, it is hot here in Denver, and just the sun has been beating down, and we haven't gotten any of those nice thunderstorms that have cooled things off in the afternoon. But I'm getting some hiking in, working on a buddy from grad school, actually, just moved to Denver a couple months ago, and so he's been getting used to getting his strength at altitude down, and we're thinking about doing a 14er, right in the middle of the month here, you know, next weekend or maybe the weekend after that. And then I've got the big hike that I'm planning with my friend second Sunday in August. We're going to do Mount Elbert, and we'll see how the season's going and whether or not I've got time to get Long's Peak in before, you know, the distractions of college football and Rapids hot takes the season inevitably falls to you know what. And then obviously we'll get into late fall and stuff, and then it'll be the middle October, and then I'll be at A Basin. So never a dull moment, just a hot moment right now for me. What is the occasion to you being in Los Angeles, Mark? And I know there's a couple big games going on from some of the MLS teams there. Any Open Cup or Cali Classico in your future?
There is a game on Friday, but I don't go to games on Friday because of the Holy Sabbath. But there is a Wednesday Open Cup game between LAFC and the Portland Timbers FC. So I hope to go to that game tomorrow night, which is kind of weird. I've still never been, having grown up in Los Angeles, and I lived here for a number of years after, during grad school, and I still have never been to Carson for a game. But I'll be going probably to LAFC for the second time in 2 years. So that's kind of cool. Should be exciting. It's really nice to be able to see that facility. I mean, it's really something to see. It's gorgeous and fancy and beautiful.
Haven't been to an LA Galaxy game, but you've been to now potentially two LAFC games, just like a lot of people from Los Angeles. Oh, in any case, we've got one big banter topic that we have to talk about, Mark, and it's going to be the good stuff from this past Super Soccer Sunday. The United States Women's National Team, world champions for the fourth time, an emphatic 2-0 victory over the Netherlands. Just got done talking on Last Word SC with our mutual colleague, Rachel McCrigger, about the U.S. Women's National Team, Mount Rushmore and where this generation fits in, and also the new group coming in as well. Your thoughts on Jill Ellis' girls getting, the job done in Paris over the weekend?
It was a great game, and I think it was a culmination of everything they've been doing. The Dutch really looked like they were, playing smart, you know, defensive, counterattacking, and then they just kind of, they really held on to that first half very, very well, and it looked like Holland might actually have a chance at this, but then they really, you know, the U.S. finally found their way. It was somewhat inevitable. This team just had too much in their footlocker, and this is, you know, the U.S. women are without a doubt not only the best team in the world for women's footballers, but one of the best teams of all time. I think that's one of those conversations that we're not having. The United States, if you are a sports fan of any kind, you're reading about equal pay, you're reading about whether Megan Rapinoe's beef with the President of the United States is appropriate, you're reading about whether Alex Morgan doing a tea-sipping ceremony on the pitch is appropriate. And I think all these narratives are boring and stupid and irrelevant. And I really am annoyed when sports writers fall into the rut of doing what everybody else is doing because it's, you know, a hot take and it makes the news. I always like to zig when everybody else is zag. So my zag here is this the best U.S. women's team of all time? I mean, you know, Carly Lloyd is a super sub. Mallory Pugh didn't make the starting lineup in I don't think any of the games. Lindsey Horan didn't make the 11 for the final game. You know, that's ridiculous. This is an insanely good team. And they probably could put together two full 11s that would have won the championship. Matt, what do you think? What's your narrative on the U.S. WNT?
Well, I think certainly, you know, 2015 in that World Cup cycle, and we'll say the Olympics before then as well, it was officially the U.S. women's national team was back. You know, they had a couple really tough games in there in finals and semifinals against the Chinas and the Japans of the world, but this was going to be the first really, I'd say, truly global World Cup for the women, in the sense that this was the deepest option. You know, it was normally in past iterations, really from 91 on, you know, it was the U.S., it was one or two other favorites, a handful of others, and then, you know, a massive gap in everybody else with amateur teams, and are we barely even feeding a team? And, you know, even with this tournament where, you know, the European teams have put so much more in infrastructure and coaching and setting up leagues in the Englands, the Netherlands, the Scandinavian countries, you know, you still had a relative of Bob Marley bankrolling, you know, Jamaica, who barely could get kits from their own federation, and like their federation was openly saying, like, no, we're not paying you, you don't count, you're not a part of us, so to speak. So, and despite in all that tournament, this was an extremely deep tournament where previously, you know, the U.S. women didn't really have to flip the switch depending on the opponent, maybe in the quarterfinals, you know, but certainly in the semis and in the final, and they had to go, you know, right from that third group stage game, obviously, where both teams were rotating the squad. They needed a result against Sweden, and they got that result, and then they ran the gambit in terms of quality teams. You know, it was the U.S. and France were considered the two favorites in that, you know, quarterfinal that everybody was talking about, you know, for 3 months leading up to the tournament. The U.S. got through that, played a very good England team, who, for my money, on paper, if this was a neutral site game, like played on the moon or something, that England was probably the second best team in the tournament. Yeah. And then, you know, they took care of a Sweden team who then beat Germany, who I think was the other danger team from the other side of the tournament. And they handled, you know, they handled the Netherlands. You know, everybody wants to talk about, you know, the U.S. women being villains on the rest of the world stage and feeling sad for Thailand. You know, the men's players, God forbid Cristiano Ronaldo takes off his shirt and shows all his muscles, or Diego Simeone, you know, reaches for certain parts of his body to establish something when Atletico Madrid wins a game. You know, those things, oh, that's all fine and good. You know, God forbid Alex Morgan wants to, you know, mock sipping some English tea after scoring a goal that, you know, puts the U.S. women on to the World Cup final. And obviously you mentioned all the things going on with Megan Rapinoe as well. This team is deserving champions. They are deservedly a dynasty in the context of the world's game. For the women and also the men, you know, there's only been two ever repeat World Cup winners in the World Cup mark. It was 58 and 62 with Brazil winning both of those games. And then, the champions, one when Italy hosted in 1934 and then the other, in 1938 when France hosted as well. I'd put some asterisks on that given what was going on in Europe at that point in terms of teams taking things seriously and other stuff going on. But you're talking about, you know, the men's game. And, you know, about how that is, you know, it's all the usual suspects with who make, you know, there's in the history of the men's final, there's only been 13 different countries to make the final, and there's only been 7 different winners, and you really only had one repeat since since World War II, and we've never had that in the women's game, and, you know, the U.S. women are the first one to do that, and between the Carly Lloyds, and I'd even go back to the Hope Solos and the Abby Wambachs, to now the Megan Rapinoes and You know, even the Alex Morgans, you know, that's a group that we can say from, you know, 2 years in the future to maybe 6 years in the past. That is a group that I think is up there in the same conversation with the 99ers, with the Mia Hamms and the, Brandi Chastains. I think those two are on equal pegging foot in terms of them being on the Mount Rushmore of American women's soccer. And just as much as the 99ers did so much for saying, hey, the women's game exists, I think now this generation has pushed it forward to where the NWSL is going to be stable. And, you know, there's a bunch of little girls who watch this tournament over the course of this summer who are going to be so much more inspired, and I'm so excited to see where that takes it, both for the game in Europe, for the women who are fighting, you know, for the equal pay opportunity 1.0 version in the Central and South Americas and the Caribbean and the Asian nations as well. And I'm really excited to see, especially with Budweiser, you know, flat out sponsoring the entire NWSL, what this means for women's professional soccer in the United States and beyond. So the women's game has never been stronger in the U.S. They've never been in a better position to advance some of their goals, you know, hashtag feminism. And I'm really excited to see what they do on and off the pitch.
100%. I think what you mentioned about Budweiser is huge. I'm very excited about that. My upcoming piece in the Denver Post is going to be all about the prospects of an NWSL team someday coming to Denver, Colorado. What are the odds for that and so on. So I think the growth of the women's game is really important, and it's really important for overall soccer culture in America. It's important for men's soccer as well, because I think they'll push each other, they'll drive each other. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's get onto it, Mark. On the birthday of America, last Thursday, July 4th, 2019, the Colorado Rapids attempted to play, then actually played, then got delayed again, and then inevitably lost to the New England Revolution. If I'm running down what happened chronologically in this game, all times are Mountain Standard, folks. 7 p.m. was the scheduled kickoff. About 30 minutes prior to that, we knew that there was going to be a delay. Kickoff promptly started just after 8 o'clock p.m. after the players having their normal proper warm-up. Spoke with a couple guys on the soccer ops and on the training team, and normally from the point where the Rapids set foot on the pitch to warm up for the game, that's normally, from that moment till kickoff, is normally about 45 minutes. Now, granted, that's with the games not normally starting right at the scheduled kickoff time and, you know, all of the other pregame festivities that easily could have been modified to make things work given the weather circumstances on Thursday. So, kickoff just after 8 p.m., an hour delay, 28 minutes in. We get another delay that was after a goal in the 8th minute by Teal Bunbury off of some nice play up the middle that drew one Tommy Smith out to the far wing, and then aforementioned former Rapids player Edgar Castillo whips a cross in. Teal Bunbury floats into the space between Shin Yashiki and Sam Vines, where Tommy Smith potentially could have been on the backside with Vines and Lalas Abubakar worrying about another New England player in the middle. Bunbury takes a touch off his chest and beats Tim Howard on the far post. Then we get the delay in the 28th minute. Then we resume with a kickoff in the at 10:10 p.m. that was just over a 90-minute delay. We get another delay at the 35th minute that is in excess of 45 minutes. And then we come back, going to resume play, an 8-minute halftime in which New England stayed entirely on the pitch. The Rapids, despite defending the goal to the south side of the stadium, decided to go back into the stadium and then come back out. 52nd minute, a set-piece opportunity for Juan Fernando Caicedo off of a great cross by Carlos Heel, kind of floats in between. Kai Kamara doesn't attack. Lawless doesn't attack the ball at all, and Caicedo is able to put it in. 71st minute, Diego Rubio scores on a set-piece and an assist from Nicolas Mesquita, who's really the one game-changer in this one for me, Mark, in terms of late substitutions or anything the Rapids that were changing. He came in and changed the game, as we've seen from him in the past. You had a bunch of yellow cards in this game, lots of frustration from both sides regarding the officials. We can talk about some of the pool reporter questions that your colleague Jake Shapiro had with the officials, and that ultimately led to a 90th minute plus one of stoppage time in which Kellen Acosta was given a second yellow card for dissent and was sent off. He will miss the game against Portland. The Rapids lost, and it was their first loss after that long unbeaten streak in which they were 5-0-2. Mark, where do you want to start with good things from this past Thursday's loss to New England?
I don't know that I have a lot to say other than asking you a lot of questions about, you know, what was it like to be at a game where there were so many people, there was such a long wait for the game. I mean, how many fans did you see kind of go to the concourse and come back, and then you came back after the delay and there were fewer fans and then there were fewer fans? Like, by the end of the game, how many people were still there, and what time was it when you finally drove home?
Yeah, okay, so I did not mention full time occurred officially at 12:18 a.m., so 5 hours and 18 minutes after the normally scheduled kickoff. Normally, listeners, that happens just before 9 p.m. So for a 7 p.m. game, normally I'm in the media area talking with Connor Casey by 9 or a little bit after, depending on stoppage time and how the game went and everything. Normally, I'm exiting the stadium by 10 p.m. I published my recap. I put out a lot of the post-media stuff that I normally post on Twitter, and if I've had a little bit of time or I want to start setting up an editorial for the next day or the middle of the week, I'll do that normally. But 10:30, I'm out of the stadium, certainly by 11 if something crazy absolutely happens, Mark. I don't think we're officially done with all the media availability and everything until just after 1 a.m. and everything, and then I was waiting around to talk with Jay because we wanted to patter about, because he was doing pool reporter stuff while I was with Casey and a couple of other players as well. So I think I was home from the game at 1:30 in the morning, so roughly an hour and 12 minutes after the game ended. I did not see any other cars in the parking lot, with the exception of other people who I presume were media people or still finishing up the stadium ops people, Mark, for tearing down the game. Will normally stay there up to 3 hours after the game as well. So presumably, I don't know, because, you know, it was a long weekend and everything, maybe they said next week, but normally if the game's over at 9 p.m. or so, you know, the guys who I interviewed for pod that special that we did talking about the grass and maintaining the pitch and the grass managers, the grounds crew, over this past offseason, normally they're leaving the stadium by just before midnight for a 7 p.m. game. So in terms of the fan situation, I'm honestly really disappointed for them, Mark, because the announced tickets distributed was just under 16,000. That would have been one of the better crowds of the season for the Rapids, and normally that 4th of July with the fireworks and everything is one of the best attended games of the season, and I'm not sure that we ever really got to see that, because with the hour delay before the game, you know, and 4th of July was on a Thursday, it was already a 7 p.m. kickoff. Normally when that game is in the middle of the week, Mark, that's normally an earlier kickoff. I think there's been a 2 p.m., a 3 p.m., a 5 p.m. I don't know that it's ever been a night game on a weekday that still had another weekday to go. So I just wonder, with people thinking, well, okay, you know, the game's not going to start till 8, the game's not going to be over till 10, I'm not in bed till 11, and I have to go to work the next morning because it's a Friday, you know, July 5th. I'm not sure that we ever saw all almost 16,000 people in the stands, and that game dwindled down significantly. If there were 1,000 people butts in seats at full-time whistle at 12:18 a.m., I would have been impressed. You know, at that point, Mark, we could have scrunched it down into just the west side of the stadium, and it still would have looked like a pretty sparse crowd, you know, for that Wednesday evening Open Cup game against the Switchbacks or against New Mexico United. But I don't blame the fans at all with those circumstances. There were a bunch of other lightning delays and everything. There was a bunch of rain on and off throughout the night as well. I'm sure you saw John Babiak's photo of the hail as well. Like, it was other than a snow classico from a Mother Nature tour de force, the fans who were in their seats at 12:18 a.m. for full time, they went through about as worse as I think you're going to get in an MLS season.
That's amazing. I'm props to any fans who stayed. The important thing to remember about a game like this is the question of whether we should take anything from it at all. Like, I don't think tactically or, you know, skill or profession wise, you can really say anything about this game, in the sense that it was so stop start. You know, players went out, they warmed up, they played, they got pulled off, they rested, they warmed up, they played, they got pulled off, they rested. You know, there's so much warm up, cool down, there's so much stop start that you can't really develop a rhythm for the game. Another question that goes with this game is whether it should have been played at all. You know, the day after the game, there was a big moment where, I think it was either not Louisville. It was either, Cincinnati or Orlando had a game the next day where it was threatened by rain and lightning, and they just canceled it in advance. They knew that this game was going to get pounded, and they just made it up, you know, 24 hours later. There's a good question as to whether this game should have been played at all. I think, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. I understand why teams want to get it in. It's a lot of money to fly teams back and forth. You know, it gets the players up and down. The Rapids have already had a rainout this year. But this game wasn't really a game. I mean, it doesn't really, the result is kind of fluky. It doesn't really tell us anything about the team. It's just kind of disappointing. I was wondering, you know, what you did in the massive amounts of breaks to kill the time. Were there games of tic-tac-toe? Did you and, Chapelis just arm wrestle? Was it, 5v2 between the front office staff and the writers? Like, what'd you do to kill the time, Matt?
It was a lot of sitting and waiting. It was a lot of banter. At some point, we kind of went around and talked about just the craziest weather situations that we've ever had in a media context or as a fan. For example, so my mom's originally from the northern part of the lower peninsula of Michigan, Mark. So if you open up your hand as the lower peninsula is, she's in like the middle part of your middle ring finger area. And so we went to a non-league, crudely equivalent to AA baseball team called the Traverse City Beach Bums, and they played 16 innings, and it was like a 4 p.m. Sunday game, and we ended up going there when we were on vacation when I was a kid. So we talked about that, and so we kind of just went around like, what's the craziest, like, latest delayed game that you've ever been a part of in a media context or as a fan or something? Obviously, Richard Fleming, our colleague, had a bunch of stories, you know, of, you know, low matches of lower league English teams, for example, where games were flat out abandoned because of a waterlogged pitch because it's England and maybe, the third and the fourth division teams didn't have the proper infrastructure. So there's a point where, you know, just the stadium's flooded, like it's not going to be not flooded for at least another 24 hours. Everybody go home. So we had a lot of those conversations. It was a lot of pittering about. And then I obviously, as you saw on Twitter, was having a little bit of fun with what were the musical selections from the in-stadium staff. They were playing Purple Rain by the deceased, the artist formerly known as Prince. Lots of Lightning and the Thunder by Imagine Dragons, and then other just rain-themed stuff. But I knew it was really, really bad when I heard for the second time, or for the second time each, Journey's Don't Stop Believing, followed by Living on a Prayer. And so at that point, when you're choosing to go, like who doesn't love Don't Stop Believing by Journey? If you're going back to that twice in the same night, like, you know it's going to end up being bad. I think Jake and I at one point spent a whole bunch of time doing a whole bunch of math to figure out how long the delays were. And between the three of them, if you're including the delay to start the initial game, we're talking in excess of 3 hours and 42 minutes. So, you know, the listeners, if we've got no stoppage time based on the normal schedule of and how the stadium runs things and everything, we potentially could have gotten barely 2 Rapids games in the time that we were sitting and waiting for the Lightning to stop for one Rapids game to occur. But no, I agree with your point, Mark. We should basically blow up good thing, bad thing, big thing for this week just because you can't really gain anything from it. You know, I'm normally one of those people where as soon as there's a red card in the game, I don't take anything from a tactical standpoint or an approach to play or, you know, managerial decisions after that's happening because of how abnormal playing down a man is, for example. Like, how can you tactically dissect the Snow Classico against Portland when there was 4 inches of snow on the ground and the Rapids played down a man for the better part of 16 minutes? So I don't think we can take a whole lot into that one. The one thing that was pretty consistent from everyone that I spoke with in the club after the game and everything is they weren't really making any excuses over the circumstances because New England also had to deal with it, Mark. And New England flew in that day, on the 4th, they arrived at DIA, and if you think about it, you know, the Rapids are thinking, a 7 p.m. kickoff for them is normal in terms of their internal clock for a home day match day. That's 9 p.m. on the internal clocks for the New England Revolution. By the time we actually started playing, it was after 10. You know, their body internally is thinking it's 2 in the morning by the time the game's over, and they went out, and credit to them, you know, Bruce Arena had the squad ready, and they were, you know, it was gut check time for them, and they got a result. So I don't think we can take a lot from the style of play or the approaches. You know, I will say that the two goals that were conceded were simple mistakes that are easily fixable by the Rapids. Spoke with Lawless after the match, and he said that on the set piece goal that the Rapids conceded, that was a miscommunication, and that's something that when they've had issues like that in the past under Connor Casey, they spend a lot of time on that in film session. He said that like that was a simple mistake. It shouldn't have happened. We'll talk about it in film session. It will be easily fixable. It will not happen in the match against Portland. I'd say similar things of the first goal from the run of play for Teal Bunbury. You know, he had the run up the middle by one of the Caicedos, and then they cut left, and okay, it makes sense to have, I think it was Kellen Acosta who went with him, but then Tommy Smith went completely out of position as well, and that left the Rapids in a, ideally 2v2 situation, 3v2 if you continue Shinyashiki, who was a little bit out wide and a little bit further upfield to handle Teal Bunbury, and then I believe it was Carlos Heel who was in there as well for Edgar Castillo to hit the cross. So, okay, you know, Tommy Smith gets pulled out of position. Inherently, Sam Vines has to cover that space. So he comes in a situation where he's not as familiar. He maybe isn't as tactically aware of some of the things going on in his surroundings, thinks maybe he needs to cheat inside with Shinyashiki on the outside. And in that, you know, he leaves, you know, one extra step for Teal Bunbury to get ahead, and a great touch off the chest off of a great cross from Edgar Castillo, and a great finish that, you know, that Tim Howard couldn't have done anything about. The Rapids could have treated the causes of the chances on both of those goals. I'm not sure they could have treated the symptoms in terms of the situations that they were in, or, you know, the saves that Howard would have had to make, or somebody else clearing a ball off the line. But just given the circumstances, it was just really, really weird. And the one thing that maybe we haven't highlighted from this one, Mark, or even really the last couple of weeks, is we're both on the record that the two most impactful offensive players for the Rapids right now, everybody healthy, everybody fit, are Kai Kamara 1 and Jonathan Lewis 2, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've done a fair amount of understanding how important Nicholas Mesquita is to the team. And I also think in my piece for the Denver Post last week of mid-season awards, Andre Shinyashiki got a lot of points, not only for what he does in just poaching in front of the goal, but also adapting as kind of like a new fangled left winger, even though it's not his natural position. So I might argue just that, Shinyashiki is maybe a tick ahead of where Lewis is, but I think in terms of raw potential, based on the fact that Shinyashiki has played a full season for the Rapids and Lewis is newish, I think you're right that Lewis is the most exciting player, that the team has right now.
Yeah, and Lewis hasn't been with the team. Obviously, he'll be back and available for selection, you know, now that the Gold Cup is over for him as well. So that's a good thing for them, but that's something that they haven't really had. And we've talked about how you mentioned Shinyashiki being a little bit out of position. Diego Rubio's grown into that role, mostly on the right side. He was a little bit more central at times in this game as well, but those are still two players who I think prefer to be up the middle strikers. One of them is a false nine. One is an underneath to a true number nine, and they're being played out of position, where I think maybe fully healthy with everybody in their best position. Jonathan Lewis is on the left, and, you know, Sam Nicholson with a fully healthy and operational back and hamstring are functional as well. Sam Nicholson did sub into this game and had a really good opportunity, but, you know, the Rapids were doing a lot given these circumstances. And, you know, like the big thing that I had written down on my sheet of paper, if we were ever going to get to big thing actually, was, you know, I ain't even mad about this loss. You know, all the ways that this right. run could have ended, you know, it could have been in the game against Portland, it could have been a blowout loss to LAFC, it could have been one where they came out flat, or where the team reverted to all of their bad habits against Anthony Hudson. You know, this was a crazy game from a weather perspective. It was a wild card unknown in Bruce Arena being relatively new with the New England Revolution. It was a wild card in the sense that it's a team that the Rapids don't have as much familiarity with, and it was a game in which where the Rapids made mistakes were simple mistakes that I think fans have a right to be upset about, but simple things that they've done well under Connor Casey. So you get the confluence of Mother Nature, the quality and, you know, circumstances of the opponent, and then a couple mistakes that are wild outliers for what this team was in the 7-0-2 run in MLS play. Like, if that's how the unbeaten streak is going to end, I ain't even mad about that. It's not like they got right. blown over by a team that was absolutely better than them. It's not like they completely beat themselves. It wasn't a dumb red card in a home game. Okay, there was the red card to Kellen Acosta, but it wasn't, you know, in the first half that immediately cost the team team or let the opponent back into the game. You know, it wasn't Tim Howard having a bunch of sneakers or anything. There are a bunch of other ways that would have been catastrophic that Rapids Twitter would have gone ham with that would have been way more likely in my mind to happen, that would have been more indicative of, oh, this was the new coach bump that could have happened. But no, it was this crazy, you know, lightning struck twice literal situation that the Rapids ended up losing. If the Rapids end up getting a 1-1 draw against Portland, this is a blip, not a trend.
Nice. I think the big thing is that picture of the owl you got on the concourse. I once, a couple years ago, I got to see a beautiful snowy owl. I think it was a snowy owl. It might have been a barn owl, but that was just roosting right over the east side concourse. You know, I think in addition to exciting weather phenomenons that happen in Colorado, you know, exciting flora and fauna sightings in the Dick's Sporting Goods Park environs is really important. You know, there's a great Twitter feed called the North Terrace Foxes, I think, and it's literally just a guy tweeting as if he's the fox that lives on the North Terrace. I don't think he's been around on Twitter lately because nobody's sighted a fox up there in a while, because really the only people who are there are Transamerica executives who show up, you know, 17 times a year. But, you know, it's fun to be out. My personal favorite, I'm sure you've seen this, is when you drive out to Commerce City. If you get there for training midday, you're likely to see about 50 to 100 different little prairie dogs sunning yep. themselves. Or, you know, standing on top of their hill looking at you like, yeah, what's up, buddy? You gonna mess with me? And it's always enjoyable. You know, honestly, if we can't enjoy the soccer, at least we could enjoy the wildlife.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Shall we move on to bigger and hopefully better things, Mark?
Let's hope.
All right, listeners, this coming Saturday at the newly renovated Providence Park at 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on the Portland Timbers. We are currently, Mark, 1934 through the 2019 Colorado Rapids MLS season. The Rapids are again in 12th in the Western Conference with 19 points off of their 19 games played. They have a record of 5-10-4 and a -9 goal differential. They are 1-5-2 at home. They'll be taking on the Portland Timbers, who we saw in the home opener of the season, in the aforementioned Snow Classico. Portland Timbers are in 9th in the Western Conference. They have 23 points off of 17 games played, a 7-8-2 record, 2-1-0 at home. That one loss, though, against LAFC in the the home opener of the season and the newly renovated opening of Providence Park, and then a 5-7-2 record on the road as well. Bit of a rough start for the Timbers after that draw against the Rapids in the opening game of the season, Mark, but then they found some success in their road games. They stabilized things at the back. They brought in Brian Fernandez from the Argentine first division, who's been an absolute breath of fresh air, and he is on the exact wavelength that Sebastian Blanco and that Diego Valeri are on. Diego Valeri is a fantastic number 10 for the team, albeit in, you know, a little bit slower role now that he's getting older. Sebastian Blanco is normally on the wing. Brian Fernandez has been playing mostly up top for the Timbers. If we look back on what they're doing defensively, they've had a little bit of a backline rotate, or a little bit of a goalkeeper. Not a controversy, but it's been Steve Clark in there, and then in the past it's also been Jeff Atanella, and so they're kind of going back and forth, so we might see somebody different in there. Dairon Asprilla and Jeremy Ibobasi, who's normally a forward, have been that other winger in the attack. They, of course, have Diego Chara, Mark, who I think probably makes our all-D-mid best 11, you know, on MLS as a whole. Laris Mabiala and Claude Dielna are the two main center backs for him. Defense is definitely the weakness. For the Portland Timbers, what do you see in the Timbers? What have we seen in them since their 3-3 draw against the Rapids? And what do you see in them doing in the game on Saturday?
I think, you know, you said it really well. They went on that epic long swing across the league where they had something like 13 road games in a row because they were waiting for their stadium to get finished for the... after renovating and adding, I think, a whole nother deck. So being at home is a big deal. Being at home for many games is a big deal. Having a team that's basically, I don't think any of their players went to any of the three international tournaments, AFCON, Copa America, or the Gold Cup. So they basically have a well-rested, a very focused team. This is not the team that we drew 3-3 that looked really bad at the beginning of the season. I think you said it well, that Brian Fernandez adds a different element. I haven't gotten to see Portland play with him much, just in highlights. And so I'm excited to see how he hooks up with Valeri. Like you said, Diego Chará is just the most fun defensive midfielder to watch. The one thing to watch with Chará is that he, plays a little bit recklessly, potentially. He's always that guy who is going to be nabbed for persistent infringement on tackles early in the game, and it may change the way he plays, but the dude just has no quit. I mean, he just runs all over the field and covers a tremendous amount of ground, and that's going to create some problems. I think that the thing that you pointed out is exactly, you know, I hate when we're experiencing the full-on mind meld, Matt, because I don't have all that much unique or brilliant to add. I feel like this whole podcast is me just being your supporter here, your Baba Booey, when you are truly whatever, you know, the lead dog in this sled race. But yeah, that those back two of Mabiala and Dielna are really questionable. They have been really shaky at the beginning. And then out on the wings, at fullback, they've also been questionable at times. I think it's Alvis Powell coming off the left, but I can't remember off the top of my head. That's the way you go at it, which is Colorado can get in behind. They may be a little bit stronger at center back. So you just hope that you can exploit them. And I think this is another one. We haven't talked about it much, but game states is important in MLS. We don't talk about it a lot. It's very important, whether you start off and put the other team under pressure by going up 1-0 versus falling behind. Colorado's actually been pretty decent this year when they go behind. I have not looked up the statistics, but that's a good thing to kind of think about of, you know, this is a team that, you know, in the past had to count on getting one goal, and holding on for dear life. And now they're a team that can go down 1-0, and come back, even go down 2-0 and come back. So, but you on the road, you really want to get that lead goal and, force Portland to have to come at you. It allows Colorado in their current, bunker encounter situation to sit a little bit deeper. So I think the hope here is that you strike first. I think it's maybe the most important thing in this game.
Yeah, no, I think matchups are definitely going to be critical in this one, Mark. You know, we mentioned, you know, Brian Fernandez is definitely a false nine on this team. You know, he's not going to be playing back to goal, trying to win headers against Lalas Abubakar and Atami Smith. You know, he's listed at 5'9". He's 25 years old. For comparison, Sebastian Blanco's 5'7" right next to me. Diego Valeri's 5'10". And then depending on who we see on the wing, you've got Daron Aspria, who's, 5'11". And I feel like Jeremy Boba sees in that category as well. Ebobasi's 6 feet tall. So what's really impressed me about what Portland's done since Brian Fernandez has come in is the rotation that they have. Valeri's definitely not as mobile as he used to be. So when we talked a couple weeks ago about the type of number 10 that Carlos Vela is, Valeri's still that, is still mostly a central attacking playmaker. You know, he's going to get the ball from Diego Chará or one of the fullbacks cutting in, and then he's going to try and connect the dots to somebody else. But in the Timbers 4-2-3-1, pretty much any one of those other three guys in that front four can rotate positions as well. So we talked about how, you know, Sebastian Blanco can be all over the field and he can touch, you know, from touchline to touchline. Brian Fernandez is going to be a very mobile number nine. They could have some give and take. And then with Jeremy Ebobasi being deployed on the wing, really because the other three players in that front four in their best position, Ebobasi can also move up forward. So maybe he comes in as a sub for Brian Fernandez if something happens, they want to change something, or maybe he comes in as a wing and then you've just got way more rotation in there. In that, I think the Rapids are going to see a challenge similar to what they saw against LAFC, where Carlos Vela and Diego Rossi are going to be all over the field, and really the only consistent thing you're going to see is whoever that number nine in the middle is going to say say mostly central. Valeri's going to be mostly central. I have no idea what anybody else is going to be. So you can't just simply say, Sam Vines, your job is to shut down Duran Asprilla. You need to be extremely spatially aware for whoever's on that field and how they're rotating and how they're changing things. Something that the fullbacks did a very good job of against LAFC, something that multiple asterisks because of circumstance they did not do very well against the New England Revolution. The other big concern I have going into this game, Mark, Kellen Acosta will be suspended for that match, and as I reported on Saturday, Jack Price is still week to week with that foot injury. And then you've got that situation with Valeri and Diego Chará in the middle. And we've talked about how that number 10 position underneath striker in the 4-4-1-1, whatever you want to call it, the guy central next to Kai Kamara has kind of changed personnel. That's been a different person. And it's been a lot of mixed results. What do you see in terms of individual matchups with that concern, given the personnel issues the Rapids are dealing with at those two positions?
I mean, the basic assumption is that you're going to start either Wilson or Bassett or both of them. You could do some funky experimentation, though. You could try and see what Nicholas Mesquita pushed back further looks like. I know that you could try Tommy Smith as more of a defensive midfielder and that kind of like Julie Ertz idea. I mean, I personally think that Julie Ertz is a much better center back than she is as a defensive midfielder. But, you know, there are some aspects to Tommy Smith's game that are, he likes to swing a long ball, and he can pass very well, and he's fairly mobile. His short passing is sometimes questionable, but I think that he could also be filling in that role. But that assumes that the Rapids are going to want to put somebody else back there at center back, and the options aren't many. You know, it's Axel Schoberg, who's had a really bad season so far. So, I don't know. How would you fill in that spot? I think the Rapids have a pretty good, deep midfield, but they don't have a deep midfield when it comes to defensive midfielders because Anthony Hudson didn't like defensive midfielders and got rid of them all. So who would you start as your midfield four?
Yeah, I think I'd have to debate about it in terms of where I start him, but I think Nicholas Mesquita has to be written in Sharpie for Connor Casey in the starting 11 in this one. Played so many years at Vancouver Whitecaps, he's going to be more familiar with that stadium, even with the renovation, than any of the other Rapids players, because no other player on the Rapids has no player of the Rapids at all has played in that stadium since it's been renovated. He'll be very familiar with what Giovanni Savarese is doing as a head coach and some of the players on there. So I think you'd want the familiarity. So I think in that, obviously Kai Kamara is starting, and I would put Nicholas Mesquita in there as well. I'd probably start Mesquita on the wing initially just to have, just because with how scrappy he is, I think Diego Rubio is going to be up for it in terms of the CONCACAFing and the chippiness and the chatting off the ball and the dark arts that Diego Chará is used to. I think of any of the players on the Rapids for somebody going up the middle, I think Rubio is going to thrive in that. You know, it's either Rubio's very feast or famine in that sense. He was really pissed off in the game on Thursday and he got a goal on a set piece, or, you know, he's going to punch somebody in the face possibly. So I would err on the side that he learned from that mistake in the game against RSL where he got his first red card. And he said a couple of weeks after that, he said, that's the first time in my life I ever punched a guy in the face. So I think him against Diego Chará is probably the best individual matchup for frustrating Chará, getting him in a yellow card persistent infringement standpoint, and getting fouled, coming up yelling at him and being so, oh, dude, I'm going to get that chance in the final third and I'm going to bury it and I'm going to look at you and I'm going to be like, yeah, what's up? What's up? I'm Diego Rubio. So Rubio's in the middle. I'd put Nicholas Mesquita on the right in that on the right side of the field. And then just because I think he's the best option that we have at left back and or left midfield, and because he's relatively well rested compared to the rest of the squad, I'd have Jonathan Lewis starting back in, coming back from the Gold Cup on the left. And in the middle, I'd probably start with Danny Wilson and Cole Bassett, and it might be a hold on to your butts. Like, let's see if Johan Blomberg can come in there and just ping a couple good passes to get us out of that situation. you know, if I were Connor Casey, I'm probably checking every single day with the physios to see if, you know, Jack Price can at least make the trip and worst case scenario be on the bench. And, you know, can you give me 20 minutes and just gut it out and be completely exhausted after that? That's where my real concern is in this match. You know, I think with all of the movement, the Rapids have seen things similar and have been attentive enough to where they're going to be able to make life difficult for Brian Fernandez and Sebastian Blanco in the ways that they did for Rossi and for Carlos Vela. I think Diego Rubio can be up for it in terms of the Rapids creating stuff on the counter, especially where their wing players will have advantage over the Timbers fullbacks. You mentioned it a couple minutes ago, Mark. It's mostly been the homegrown Marco Farfan and then, of course, Jorge Villafania on the left. But then it's been, Zarik Valentin on the right. If I go back to, 2018 – Timbers Twitter, Mark, the joke that they were making is, oh, Zarik Valentin is coming in. How nice of the Portland Timbers up 2-0 to voluntarily go down to 10 men against an opponent to let them get back into the game. So I think the Rapids, I think it's a bunker and counter situation. I think you go in the mid block. You hope that you can stifle the front three headed monster that the Timbers have going on. You get the ball and you get it out to the wings as quickly and as simply as possible. And you let them run and try and get the ball into Kai Kamara in the box. Maybe Diego Rubio picks up the pieces, but I'd really be looking to see, you know, could whichever wing player it is, maybe it's Shinya Shiki, maybe it's Sam Nicholson, can they give us 30 minutes good off the bench as a super sub position? And is Jack Price, you know, able to at least give something, you know, even if it's in a substitute role? I think if that happens, I think the Rapids are in a position where they have a game plan to have success. I still think this is going to be probably their toughest road game of the season so far.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark, shall we do predictions? How do you see this game going down?
I'm so bad at predictions lately, Matt. I was just telling somebody the other day, I think I've gotten all of them. If we were really bored, we would go back and listen and see, how we're doing statistically. And then, you know, everybody could make fun of me that I, think I know so much about the Colorado Rapids, and yet I'm, 0 for 17 on predictions. This feels like a gutty, difficult, against the grain, against the narrative, MLS gonna MLS kind of win for Colorado. You know, if Portland has been really strong, they are coming out of the box solid, but Colorado's gonna have all their pieces back together. They're gonna be, you know, with the exception of Acosta, they're gonna have a lot of different options. And I think maybe Jonathan Lewis will come back and give this team a little bit of fire that they haven't had. So, I'm feeling 2-1. I'm feeling 2-1, Matt.
2-1 to the Rapids? Okay. I'll flip the script for the sake of being a contrarian, and maybe this will even out in a 1-1 draw for the Rapids. I'll take 2-1 to the Timbers in this one. I'll say that that's based on a little bit of a hunch I have that maybe Jack Price isn't going to be able to give you more than 20 minutes off the bench. I definitely, would not expect him to start in this game. I think Jonathan Lewis comes back and creates something that leads to either a Kai Kamara or Diego Rubio goal in this one, but I still think the Timbers are going to have most of the ball. It's going to be a lot of, oh crap, the ball's at Diego Valeri's feet and having to track runners. And I think inevitably, either with the team being exhausted, having some limited options with Kellen Acosta not available or Jack Price not available, or maybe they have to make a late sub and get Cole Bassett into the game, and you know, just the moment's just a little bit too big for, you know, teenager Cole Bassett. One other joke that we were making in the rain delays on Thursday, Mark, was how mad Cole and Sam Vines' parents were that they missed curfew. Okay, so
I wonder if Commerce City has actually one of those old school police style curfews where teenagers aren't allowed to be out. I mean, I think Denver had one for a while. I may still have one where teenagers aren't allowed to be out after 10 p.m. So they may have literally had to call an Uber to come home because it was illegal to drive home.
Really? I didn't know that was, I know they had a curfew in the suburb of northern Los Angeles that I grew up in, but it was 11 p.m. But if you had somebody over 18 with their driver's license, then it wasn't a problem. So you could be out with your parents after 10, you could be out with one of your friends who was a high school senior after 10, but if you were just chilling in a park for example, and it was like 10:30 or something, and the cops showed up, they ask everybody to see their IDs, and if nobody's 18, then legally you have to go home. It was probably a narrative just to stop people from holding the High Line.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think this whole thing, this is a Googleable answer, but my recollection, my belief is that this is the kind of thing that's absolutely never enforced unless the police pull over a car full of teenagers and smell marijuana, and they're like, oh, sweet, we have total probable cause to search this car because they're breaking curfew.
Yeah, okay. In any case, Mark, getting back on track, I'll take 2-1 to the Timbers in this one. I think it'll be a gutty performance for the Rapids, but just either it being outgunned or the circumstances or, you know, the fans, you know, really getting in on the referee and just the Rapids not getting any bounces going their way or any calls going their way. I think it'll be a performance that overall I think the Rapids could be happy with, but ultimately a result that, you know, feels, you know, like salt in the wound. I will say that, you know, if Kellen Acosta and Jack Price were both available in this game and able to go 90 minutes, I'd be picking a 1-1 draw right now. So, you know, maybe one of the yellow cards gets appealed, you know, by the disciplinary committee and Kellen Acosta is available. Maybe it turns out Jack Price is able to start and go 60 minutes. Then I would amend, my prediction if either of those things happen to a 1-1 draw. All right, Mark, we've got one more thing to preview. Not that it's relevant to the Rapids MLS season, but this probably before we pod next, the Rapids will be taking on Arsenal in their big midseason friendly, the Kroenke Classico, I guess, Kroenke Cup. This will be on Monday, July 15th. It'll be at 7 p.m. at DSG Park. Arsenal's flying in the day of, Mark, and then they are flying out that night to go wherever they're playing, Bayern Munich on Wednesday the 17th for their big the start of the International Champions Cup. We are, both have very strong feelings about some of these international friendlies. What do you see in this game? Do you care at all, Mark? Like, is Unai Emery even going to care?
Come on, Arsenal. Come on, Arsenal. I mean, I think that the challenge of this game is, you know, who they play. I feel like who they line up. I feel like the odds, this is very likely to be the kind of game where Emery will roll out 3 or 4 of the most famous Arsenal players and then take them off after about 15 minutes after they're up 4-0. And the Rapids will probably do the same thing in the sense that they're going to rotate their squad a lot because this is a game that means something. I'm also going to suggest another alternate name. El Kroenkeko. What do you think about that?
Oh, that could work.
We won't have a lot of other opportunities to play this, but it would be fun if it catches on, and it'd be nice to see this happen again. I lament that I'm not going to be there. Arsenal is my other favorite team ever since I read, Fever Pitch back well before the movie that was actually about baseball, which is really confusing, but that's a whole nother story. So this will be a fun one, and I don't think anyone should take it too seriously. And please don't overpay for tickets, kids.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been on the record that I think, you know, these things are pure cash grabs, and I don't care for them, Mark. You know, I think if you wanted to have an international friendly or just a game against a non-regular opponent that we see at DSG, you know, I think there's plenty of clubs in Liga MX that would be a better exercise in terms of that team taking it seriously and working with their schedule. In that one, you know, I think if we were to list the, you know, at the end of the game, let's take all the minutes played by everybody and then list that best starting 11 by minutes played by each team. You know, I think we're probably going to see something closer to the roster that Connor Casey rolled out for the Open Cup game against New Mexico United. And I hanker to say that we're looking at, like, you know, a reserve, you know, fifth round proper of the FA Cup, maybe even a borderline U23 side from Unai Emery. You know, I have no doubt that we'll see a couple of those stars, but like you said, Mark, I'd be shocked if any of them on either side really play more than 30 minutes. I would gander that Tim Howard might not even be on the bench for this one. He might be doing something media related, in and around the stadium. I bet that Kai Kamara doesn't play in this one. If Jack Price does make it out alive from Portland, that we won't see him in this game. You know, it's going to be, you know, we could see Matt Huntley in this match. We could see Sam Vines for 90 minutes, for example, probably a Kofi Opare or what?
Definitely going to see Sebastian Anderson.
Yes.
Very likely going to see Axel Schoberg.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not going to care about this game in the context of the result. I'm not going to hype it up as much as maybe some other people or other clubs might when, you know, their clubs are playing one of these big games, you know, like, you know, Manchester United, and you play at the bigger football stadium and it's completely sold out with the tickets being ridiculous and everybody there is wearing a Man U kit. So I think we'll see a lot of Arsenal normies for this one. You know, I'll be curious to see, you know, what that looks like in terms of burgundy shirts as opposed to the Arsenal red shirt, or even what people like you, Mark, who are Rapids fans, who your European club is Arsenal, and where their allegiances lie or how they choose to approach the game from a fan support game. But in terms of my coverage at Last Word or what I'm going to be more focused on, you know, I want to see what Matt Hundley does against a potentially very quality youth player. And then I'm going to write about that in the same ways that the biggest thing I was most interested in after the Boca Juniors friendlies was what the Rapids were doing as far as building relationships with South America talent to try and meet agents and scouts and, you know, scout talent on that continent, and also what Sam Vines did against Pavone in that game against Boca Juniors. So I'll be knocking down with some of the people who send me whispers and ravens occasionally to see if this means anything as far as the Kroenke connection and pseudo affiliation that the two clubs have had. And more importantly, I want to see Matt Hundley nutmeg somebody who's going to be, you know, on Arsenal's first team in a couple of years.
That'd be awesome. That'd be Elneny or Mesut Ozil, or maybe somebody who's, you know, 15 years old and plays for the England U23s. That'd be awesome.
Absolutely. All right, listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard. Check out our respective written work at the Denver Post and LastWordOnSoccer.com. Hit us up on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. If you've got something that's longer than 280 characters or want to get in touch in some other way, Rapids96Podcast at gmail.com. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. We are now officially on iHeartRadio, both the website and the app. You can stream us, and our full archives have downloaded there on well. If you prefer that over where you've normally been finding us, you can get us on there. And of course, head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL, all lowercase, for a really special deal on their digital content, reading about what Mark and Jake Shapiro are writing about the Rapids. And I'm sure Kisla's got some hot button stuff to talk about, you know, as the Denver's training camp, you know, Denver Broncos training camp is, you know, just weeks away. And of course, the Colorado Rockies, who had a really disappointing end to the All-Star break, Mark. But I don't know if you checked the score. I saw that Charlie Blackmon homered. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah. It was a nice dinger. It was straight away, and they were down 2-0. If you care about the results of the All-Star game, which you should not, but Blackmon, I hadn't seen him since like last season because I'm not paying as close attention to the Rocky, but he is sporting an absolutely phenomenal beard.
I mean, he's been growing that, I think, I don't remember what it was. I think he hasn't shaved since 2009. So, but yeah, in any case.
It's really crazy old guy living in a cabin in the mountains level right now. It's impressive.
All right, listeners, we'll see you next week. Hopefully recapping, you know, a good result against the Portland Timbers. And if nothing else, you know, a fun outing on a Monday night, you know, regarding the game against Arsenal. We'll see you then.
Peace.